Had you brekkie? Check. Walk the dog? Check. Drop the kids off? Check. Been to the bank to get a loan to buy a pie at the footy? Check. Everything's set for a super saddy. But there's one thing left to do. Tune in the receiver to the ABC for the Kudamine Champions. Check. Jeffy, it's over to you. Check. 1, 2.
Thanks, Unc. But one thing that doesn't check for a super saddy of footy is there's no game on the Savo. Jeff Richardson here with the Kudamine Champions on ABC Local Radio. Instead of a game, Ian Cover, good morning to you. You'll be in the sheds with Paul Daffy.
Yes, Richo, that's right. Whilst there is no AFL as such, there's still plenty of Australian rules football being played the length and breadth of the country. And look forward to your calls this afternoon.
You're with the Kudamines. You're with Greg Champion. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. Norwood take on Port Adelaide in the elimination final.
Oh, can Port win something?
I hope not.
Billy Baxter, good morning.
Hello there, everyone. We might organise a scratch match. Play it on the vacant MCG.
A pick-up game. And Torch McGee, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning, Richo, and good morning to everyone. And Mooney Valley is looking very attractive today.
Well, is this officially the start of the spring carnival?
It is the first Group 1 for the season at the Manukato Stakes at Mooney Valley.
Nothing further happening in Rye, I'm led to believe.
The Rye Hotel is closed down for the summer.
Torch, first question.
Yes.
Were you there last night?
I was there, yes.
Were they the quarter quad match?
No. Well, there were. It was a quarter quad, but I didn't indulge.
And a good
I'm saving
thing
myself
too.
For today.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Well, what games are going to be on?
Good question. Look, I'll just check my local guide.
Yeah. Torch.
Did you go there thinking they could win?
I went there thinking they'd be competitive. I wasn't confident.
That's a sidestep.
Yes. Yeah. I wasn't confident because the Dogs have got a reasonable record against the Swans this year. Yes. But yeah, they got blown. Last time they played them, got blown away in one quarter, and they got blown away in one quarter
happened
again.
Yeah. But you know what? Torch, I think we can now dream the dream after last night. Last night, the door has been opened. Maybe just the slightest little crack, so just a sliver of light is coming through. But after last night, we can dare to dream for one of the greatest things that never happened, to quote our colleague Jared Waitley, and that is the St Kilda Footscray Grand Final that didn't happen at the end of the last decade, 10 years later. Is it possible?
It is possible, Richard. In fact, I think it might happen. Yes, I can hear a bit of pooing coming from the Cat supporters.
Well, the Cat supporters wouldn't want it to happen, doesn't mean it's not possible.
It's more than not possible, it's quite likely.
What?
You're writing off the Cats?
In fact,
I'm just saying the quality of the competition in the finals, it really throws the door isn't just a sliver of light, it's thrown it wide open, Richo.
They're dreaming the impossible dream, Richo. Yeah. And the impossible dream is that St Kilda Footscray Grand Final.
Yeah, well, it remains on the table, as they say in these modern times. Things are always on the table. They're never off.
No. Actually, I think you bring it to the table and then it's on the table.
Now, I want to nominate Kudamine Champions Player of the Year. I know it's early. I know there's two rounds to go. But he's been involved in two crucial pieces of play during the season. One was the drawn game between Footscray and Richmond at the Docklands when he was involved in a controversy and who should take the kick after things being relayed, and he tied up the game, which in a lot of ways saved the Dogs' season at that stage. And then you really knew, I think you'll agree with me, Torch, you were there last night.
I was.
You knew the Swans were gone when Footscray, bringing the ball out of the back line, as so often happened, that last kick wasn't quite precise, bit of a fumble, the tackler's there, running past is the fullback, Brian Lake.
Yes.
Took the handball, ran in, kicked the goal,
yes,
some 175 metres upfield from Barry Hall.
Barry was about 175 metres behind, that's right.
And when he kicked that one, you knew they had it.
That was it. That was
the fullback
point.
Kicks a goal, and that's two big goals he's kicked for them this year. I love it when a fullback kicks a goal.
Actually, I thought you were going to say Big Will because he also had a hand in it last night.
Big Will had a great game, but as for an absolute defining moment, Brian Lake, and he's now had two for the season.
And it also showed the difference between the two teams, because every time we had a shot from the 50-metre line, it either went wide or didn't make the distance. Every time the Dogs had a shot from out there, it went straight through the middle. So, and that, if the three times we've played them this year, their kicking for goal has been sensational, and ours has been very ordinary.
Torch, just to give you a brighter side on your just review now of the Swans season, which has ended last night, They were good last Saturday night.
They were. But a week is a long time in football.
But Katie, they were good last Saturday night, and we got a cameo, particularly in the third quarter last Saturday night.
Kirky.
Yeah.
What a footballer.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fantastic in there.
A bloke that can actually just will himself onto the contest, onto the game. It's just fantastic. Yeah. Was he, what happened to him last night?
He played a very serviceable game, but
Did he tag someone up last night?
Well, it was a bit. I think you'd probably say the Dogs won most of the contests out of the middle, particularly after the quarter time.
Also, Brett Kirk, he can't do it 2 weeks in a row anymore.
Well, he was good for a half or so, but you know, when the Dogs got on top, nobody really got their hands on the ball.
Goodsy quiet last night?
Carrying an injury.
Oh.
Torch, people can call us old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned.
Yeah, you're old-fashioned.
Did the Swans fall for the oldest trick in footy?
The three-card
trick, however many cards you like. Playing injured players in
they
finals.
Did. Yes, they did. But they did? They managed to get away with it during the last 6 or 7 weeks. They've got away with it because they could send Goodsy up forward. He kicked 8 goals against Freo. He did a very good job there last week. But I think you've got to say the Dogs' back line really played very well last night, and he didn't get any space.
Gee, this is drifting into sensible football.
No, it certainly is.
And you know why, Champy?
Why?
Because this is the business end of the season. The BEOTS.
There's only one thing missing, and that's for somebody to say, that's what it's all about. Whatever that is and whatever it is. It's all about it. There's no argument.
Can we just pop back the bright, just to get away from sensibleness for a minute?
Yeah, let's get back to something really ridiculous, like how Adelaide could be 5 goals ahead at home in front of a baying partisan crowd and be run over by Collingwood.
I want to talk about
a baying part crowd. Where was the full house?
Oh, the Royal Show's on.
There's the story. I've been bored senseless all week about, Sydney, no one went to the Olympic. Who could care less?
36,000, that's all right.
Oh, Adelaide, we've got to have a home. We've got to have a home final, and the Brownlow shouldn't be called the Brownlow. We've got to have home finals. Then they get one, and no one turns up. Look, I don't think they should ever be given another one.
36,000.
So now you said,
and I've got something to say about that during my tipping segment, because
did it affect it, did it?
Oh, did it ever?
Oh, so what? The idea is you've got to get goals early over there to take the crowd out of it.
Put the crowd out of business.
Now the crowd puts themselves out of business. They don't turn up.
The show bags this year were looking very impressive.
No, they would be too.
Oh, yeah.
Do you get organic show bags over there, do you?
Are there any other kind?
Yeah.
Did you actually read the... there was a little article in the paper last week about Eddie McGuire and co driving back to the airport.
Oh, yeah.
No.
What happened? They got harassed by some gentlemen in another vehicle.
Car.
Yeah,
In Adelaide.
And there was a sort of a little slice of life in Adelaide about a couple of guys who were doing some rather obscene things out the window.
The show being on or not, it was pathetic.
Mm. 36,000?
Yeah, it's ordinary. You should be full up every time.
It's a final. Why was there a single seat empty?
Leave him alone. They've got beat.
I actually don't know why.
Maybe Adelaide's a developing market. Maybe they need to promote it over
there.
They
got beat, and they got beat by Collingwood. He's done it hard this week. But the thing was, I was at a birthday party in the afternoon, and I just snuck off a text. I thought, well, Champion, actually, he sent one to me, and the text was,
Scott.
Who would have thought Scott Stevens? I had no idea what it meant. I thought, what's he won the raffle? Or that,
Scott Stevens, he's a could have been of the year.
So I sent one back saying, yeah, but what's he done that I have to work out whether to believe it or not? Or who would have thought? He's gone, kicked 4.5. And I said, what's the score? He said,
Crows up by four.
Then
that was the highlight.
That was the early crow.
that was the high moment.
Then Dane Swan snuck a couple in and it went back to two before the long break.
All fell apart.
Yep. Oh. And you know what was ringing around the ground last night halfway through the third quarter?
No, what, Torch?
Why did we ever let Scott Stevens go?
Scotty Stevens been, what's the word, been vilified as a donkey?
By you.
Not by me. Okay, once we called him a go back to the SANFL type of player. And he's come good in no uncertain terms. And as for the 36,000 crowd, Jeff, they should put a new team out in West Adelaide, I'm sure.
They're thinking of it as we speak.
Champs,
while
we're having serious Saturday morning crow talk, I want you to repeat what you said off air about Jenny Craig and his coaching record in finals.
Well, you're making this up because I didn't say anything.
Come on, we all heard you.
You endorsed his new style of play. We're going with this before they join us too, for Adelaide. You endorsed in round one, I quoted from the newspaper, he's new, we will be attacking this year.
Yes.
And you said, that's fantastic.
He was abandoning the peloton.
If that was the attacking staff last Saturday, God help them if they go defensive.
I'm going to use the bit short on cattle out clause. We had no attacking options.
Scotty Stevens.
Oh,
Then he went down back after he'd kicked four.
Well, there's a bad move.
So you're bagging him now?
No, well, I am now. But no, I've got no problems with Neil Craig. I'm going to use another one. We've played above ourselves this year.
Ooh.
Yeah, we have. Just to make the eight is fine with me.
Right. And you know what? And Neil Craig yesterday, he was quoted in the newspaper saying, he blamed himself. Oh, he said, this was my problem, that I just set them the goal of making the eight. I should have been more, had higher goals.
Oh, so once they got to the eight, it was, let's go to the opera.
Yeah. So you fought, Craig, he sucked you in.
No, I think his problem is he should be happy with having made the eight.
So that's why nobody turned up to Football Park last weekend. Oh, well, made the eight.
Well, I think in political terms, there's such a person as the aspirational voter.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, what you have over in Adelaide is the non-aspirational football team, right? And they didn't have high enough aspirations.
No, Craigie.
Hey, we touched up your mob, Torchy.
Put it this way. Their KPI was making the eight, and they achieved it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the season's a success.
Of course it is.
Let's all go to the show.
Because you know what they did? By making the eight, they ticked that box.
You've got to tick boxes in this new century.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if half-time grand final entertainment, there'll be a whole lot of boxes out there and people just all come and tick them.
Well, put it this way. We didn't bring our A game.
No, you definitely did not do that
last week.
Okay.
All right.
Wait till next year.
It's gone. Yeah. Right. Now, I'd like to welcome now to the ABC microphones, joining us here on the Could Have Been Champions this morning, author of a new book about the draft, interestingly called The Draft. Footy writer with The Age, Emma Quayle. Welcome to the Could Have Been, Emma.
Thank you very much. I was very proud of that title. I came up with it myself.
Did you workshop that?
I did. I did a lot of boxes and then ticked off a few and I settled on the draft in the end.
Now, the first thing you can do is just, because you are now the expert on the draft, having done one, a book about it and everything, just tell Champy where they're going to get their cattle from in Adelaide.
Your cattle. You've got some okay cattle there, haven't you? I like Kurt Tippett. David McKay.
He was all right in the first bit of the year. Fell away. But that's what young people do, isn't it, Emma?
It is. They do take a while sometimes. And I think he'll be a superstar, won't he?
Well, we hope.
And a couple of key injuries over there.
The old key injury factor, eh?
Now, the draft has become more and more interesting as time goes on, especially as it's become harder and harder to win the flag. Lots of footy supporters can get a lot of fun out of watching the junior players and watching the draft. It's almost like a compensatory activity. And Emma, you've been working on this book for a long time, I know, because you've made yourself a bit of an expert on the draft, so much so that you're the go-to person whenever anyone wants to talk to an expert about what's coming up in this year's draft. When did you first get the idea to actually write a book about the draft?
Well, I was lucky because the publisher actually came to me about
it. They had the idea.
Yeah, they had the idea, and then I had a little bit of a think about how I would like to do it, what would be the best way, and decided to choose these five boys and follow them around, and that's what I've ended up doing.
And which five?
Trent Cotchin is one of them. Mm-hmm. Pat Vesprémy played last night.
Yeah.
Who else have I got? Brad Ebert. Mm-hmm. I thought he was from the famous family, so he'd be interesting.
And Ben McAvoy.
Ben McAvoy is my country boy.
And Junior Boy.
Yes, and Junior was just
now,
Junior.
It's worked out. Either your judgment's absolutely impeccable every card has fallen for you, because all five of them have ended up, you could have easily had two or three of them not get picked, couldn't you?
Well, actually, it's funny because in an ideal world, maybe I would have liked one of them to at least sweat it out a little bit, to be sitting there at pick 40 and still waiting. And actually, it's funny because Pat Vesprémy was supposed to be that player. I thought at the start of last year, it's funny to think of now because he just played two finals, but people were saying, oh, no, he's a bit overweight, he's a bit slow, he's not fit enough, he's this and that. And
rookie,
he had a lot of doubters.
At best, perhaps.
Well, maybe a late pick. And everyone kept saying those sorts of things to me. And the more they said, the more I wanted to write about him. And I'm glad I did. He's a pretty colourful kid.
It's a terrific book. My son, who's 16, he and a lot of his friends have all just devoured it, which just goes to show children that age can read something longer than a text message. but it would have been a very different book if one of the five you'd chosen had not been picked for whatever reason. It's turned out they're all in their own way very big success stories in footy terms. But it's not just about the stories of the boys going through their junior footy. You've obviously got a lot of cooperation from Hawthorn. I found the chapter about Hawthorn and their drafting department quite fascinating in that at Hawthorn, the people who look after the draft and the people who coach the footy team have nothing to do with each other almost.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, I wanted to try and follow a club through the season as well, almost like a sixth character, just to compare how deliberate and analytical they are with the boys and how uncertain their season is. So Hawthorn were really good to me. They let me sit in on their recruiting meetings just to hear how they talk about the boys, all the terms that they throw around. And yeah, that's what they basically try to do. I think Chris Palkin sort of heads up the recruiting out there, and he follows a lot of American sports and has noticed how they split, the recruitment department from the actual day-to-day business of running the team and getting it out there and winning games. Just to remove, I suppose, if you're running a team, it's all emotional and you're riding on wins and losses and thinking of the immediate.
And coaches are worrying about their contracts, whereas the recruiting department ought to be worrying about the long-term health of the club's list.
Exactly. I think that was his theory. You can sit back and not be so caught up in it all and make some more sort of logical decisions than crazy coaches.
Now, is that turning out to be a template for the other 15 clubs now? Do you know?
I'm pretty sure most of them would do the same thing, to be honest.
The coaching department has very minimal input into drafting.
Maybe not that, but I reckon it's not a bad idea.
What drew you to the draft? Why were you so intrigued as to the mechanics of a draft that you write a book? And in your research, have you found a better system for drafting?
Well, first of all, I think I got interested in it around 2001 because that was the year that Chris Judd and Luke Hodge, Luke Ball came along, and I'd just gone over the sport at that stage, and I was just really interested by how do you actually make that decision if they're so close and so hard to split, like what? How do you make the call? And I just kind of got interested in it from there and thought no one's really, really covered it too much in the papers. So I started going to draft camp and all those sorts of things. I reckon the draft's fine. I reckon just clubs are starting to do more, and that's what will be interesting in the next so many years, like the amount of video footage they've got, all the psychological analysis and all those sorts of things will probably get bigger and bigger. They've just got so much information these days, and it's probably just how they interpret it and make sense of it that is helping them hopefully pick the right players.
Is anyone doing something a little esoteric, like consulting a spiritualist?
It's probably not a bad idea, is it?
During your interviews and talking to various young boys that have been through the draft system, did you talk to any that once played for the Geelong Falcons to ask them now, what it's like not to have ended up playing at Geelong where they grew up and just harbour the desire to play with the local team?
The Geelong Falcons have got a good record.
Have they ever?
And none of them go to Geelong.
And my latest... So you didn't speak to any Falcons boys that have gone all over the country? Johnny Brown, for example?
Well, Patrick Dangerfield bobs up.
Yeah.
A little bit.
He's still at school at Oberon High School.
I know. Yeah. He's had an incredible year. He's probably had a busier year than he actually would have had he moved.
And still playing some games for the Falcons because he's allowed to by the Crowies. Now, because I understand now, of course, with the Gold Coast emerging, and they've actually got all the odd numbers. Apparently, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. They just keep picking the odd numbers when they get the turn. My mail is there's at least 4 kids in the current Falcons side who are just under the draft age for this year. So next year, they'll be the Gold Coast Falcons. Make no mistake about it. Have you had a look at what might happen for the Gold Coast?
I've had a little bit of a think ahead, but it's a bit hard at this stage. I think there's quite a few Tasmanians who will probably end up on the Gold Coast as well.
Ah.
So that'll be a good result.
They're not all named Rewalk.
And of course,
I think it'll be great.
In a week's time, November, isn't it? The names will be being drawn out.
Yep.
Who are the names for us that we should be listening for right now, Emma?
There's a few that have been bobbing up through the year. Jack Watts is one. He's out at Brighton Grammar. He's a good player. Could be Melbourne's next centre forward. Mm-hmm. Nick Natanui, he's the Fijian kid from Perth. He's going to be really interesting because he was hyped up for a long while, but now I'm not sure where he's going to go. I think it might be one of those ones where the clubs are half hoping someone else picks him so they don't have to take the risk.
So he might drop down a little bit, but he'll be drafted, won't he?
Oh, yeah, for sure, and really high as well. Yeah. Daniel Rich is the other one. He's a midfielder. He's funny kid because he's got all these blonde curls and he looks like the most angelic person you'd ever meet, but yeah, he just goes at it so hard. He's the complete opposite of what he looks like.
And it was interesting because we're all fans, and we, once we barrack for a club, you know, growing up as kids, or sometimes you just discover you've been told who to barrack for. You know, you're just going to barrack for all your life. And all these kids at one stage were barracking for a club, and then end up getting drafted, and they soon come to grips with the fact that, you know, they're not playing for the club they barracked for. Did you meet any that really did want to play for the club they barracked for?
Not really, to be honest.
Gee, that disappoints me.
Yeah. I reckon they just grow up these days knowing that they could end up anywhere.
You'd be setting yourself up for disappointment.
They've got to get used to it. There's a great quote in here. It's very simple. They're the team that picked me.
Yeah.
It's just like you growing up in Riddles Creek reading The Sun every day, and then you get drafted by The Age. You had to cop it sweet, didn't you?
I had to, yeah, but I had to change.
And one of the things I've been talking about the Falcons, but last year we had a situation where one under 18 team had 5 of the top 20 draft picks in Northern Knights. So that's unlikely to happen again, isn't it, really?
Probably. Yeah. A couple of the Perth teams have produced some players in the last few years. East Freo always gets a few up, but that was pretty special by the Knights.
Mm-hmm. Now, and the 5 you've talked to were all in the same draft?
Yes, they all got picked up last November.
So having had a good look at them and interviewed them along the way and everything, that if I'd have been the recruiting manager from one of the AFL clubs and said, Emma, you've had a look at all these boys, you've been talking to them, which one should we pick first? What would have you said?
Out of those 5?
Mm.
Well, first I would have asked for a fee. I'm joking.
It is footy after all.
Yeah, I'm joking. I was a big rat for all of them, actually. A few of the recruiters have actually said to me after reading this that they picked up a few things that maybe they didn't pick up, especially about Junior. I think people didn't know what to make of him last year, whether he was disinterested or lazy. And I was always trying to put up a strong case for him. So he was the one, I think, who had people really intrigued.
So you can't split them in?
I can't, because they're all like my little brothers or something. I'd feel bad. I think Trent Cotchin is going to be an absolute superstar.
Well, he was the highest pick out of those, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And put it that way, is that what you expected he would be, the first of them picked?
I thought he should have been number one.
Is that right?
I'm biased.
He's very good.
He's just a special player, and to meet him, and he was 17, and he's so wise and knowing. He's even said to me, I've said to him after I watched him debut, like, it's just so exciting for me to now watch these guys all play. Like, I love it so much. And he said to me, oh, but just remember, it's all good news so far. It won't always be good news.
Aware of that. One of the many superb things in this book is the photo on the frontispiece, which is Trent Cotchin wearing the big white V, Cyril Junior Rioli wearing the Northern Territory rep jumper, both aged 11, playing in the under 12 national, having just played in the under 12 national championships, standing with their arms around each other after a game. And you said, well, at that age already, these two had been identified. But that isn't always the way, is it? Some of them are very late starters. And Torch and I have got a bit of a bee in our bonnets about this. There's some who, because the draft comes so early, it closes the door on some players who may not really be ready till they're 21.
It shouldn't, should it? You look at Brad Dalziel at Brisbane this year. He missed out on a few drafts. Harry Taylor, this is what, 21?
Scotty Stevens.
Matty Stokes.
Yeah, Matthew Stokes is a classic.
And for your next book, Emma, are you going to follow around 5 blokes who you reckon might get the chop from the list?
You also mentioned
it's
about...
5 here.
mentioned about Ben McAvoy being your sort of token country boy. How different was it for him compared to some of the others?
It was a fair bit different just because of the travel involved. And he had a really long season because he ended up playing on grand final day. He was travelling a couple of hours just to get to training, then a couple of hours back to his farm in Deterang, and he really put some miles in, as did his parents. And you kind of forget about that. They just put in so many hours carting them around to get them to games and watching them and all those sorts of things. And then the draft comes along and they sort of lose their sons in a way.
It's another wonderful feature of the book is the way the families and the parents emerge and everything that they go through with the whole thing. And, of course, the draft, what, thousands put their name up and maybe 70 get taken.
Yep, it's pretty tough.
A whole lot who don't, and they're also really good footballers.
Yep, and you'd like to think there is a chance for them if they are good enough that someone will keep an eye on them.
Great read, Emma. Thanks for that.
Thank you. Well done.
Emma, thanks a lot for coming in. The book is called The Draft, Inside the AFL's Search for Talent, written by Emma Quayle. And, of course, you've now got the under-18 finals to look forward to.
It's all happening. You're and obsessed. Draft camp.
Yeah.
Yes. Excitement.
It all happens again. You're with the Could Have Been Champions on ABC Local Radio. Coming right up, Torch's Tips.
Pied Piper of Paupers or Prince of Portfolio? I fill it or mince, you might do your chips on Torch's Tips.
Thanks, Unc. Torch.
Yes.
The quarter quad.
Yes, last week it was the Adelaide Collingwood game.
Mm.
Everything was going according to plan up until half time, Champy. And we had we had a split in the first quarter. We had Adelaide sort of asserting themselves during the second quarter.
Mm.
And I said, this is looking good. Adelaide just have to keep the foot on the pedal.
Mm.
We'll get home here.
Could have gone one or two ways, Torch.
That's right. Which
Adelaide could have got up or they could have gone down.
Or they could have got flogged, which is what happened in the last.
Torch, I blame the people of Adelaide.
I do too. Or anybody who's got any connection with people of Adelaide. I think I blame them as well.
What was your crowd? You were going to make a... You said in your Torch's Tips you were going to say something about the crowd.
Well, what I was going to say is I'm not happy about the way in which Adelaide were coached last week.
Oh,
I'm not happy in which the way they played, and I think the crowd is just part of that.
So you're bagging Craigie.
Bagging them all because they cost us money.
How much did they cost us?
Conservatively, I don't know, because Collingwood won, therefore probably didn't pay very much. I think they probably paid about $1,400 for a dollar, so about $700.
But how could they have been coached better? A net result.
Well, if you're playing Collingwood, you've got to take a few of the opposition out for a start.
What, dancing or to dinner or maybe a movie? Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right, let's not
infiltrate. He is doing the classic TTHP.
TTHP?
Talking through his pocket.
Let's not dwell on the past, okay. Torch.
Yes, well, look, we've got Collingwood again.
We've got an opportunity tonight.
You have. And I'm going to take it.
All right, take it.
Okay.
All right, the Saints are the home team,
first
named, and they'll be playing in the white shorts, and they'll be playing in the black shorts. Anyway, I think the Saints will win.
Me too.
And I think that they'll be a better odds than Collingwood. Therefore, if we do manage to snag the quarter quad, we might get a reasonable payout. So, first quarter, 1-2, the Saints to get away early.
1-2, eh?
So if Collingwood's ahead at quarter time, we're gone.
We are.
Good, I like this.
Yes.
We're leading with our strength.
I haven't given up completely on Collingwood. Second quarter, 1-2-9.
Ah, that's what I like to see. Yeah.
Repeat that in the third quarter, 1-2-9.
So we're going skinny. It's going to be a close game.
And then at the end, the Saints just hold their own and 1-2 again. So the Saints to win by up to 4 goals.
Well, straight out, the Saints are showing over $2 and the Maggie's about $1.70. So that might be good for you too.
Toshi, your tips are a palindrome.
One and two.
For 50-cent unit, that'll cost you $18, and you've got to be on by 7:30 tonight.
Just looking into the past, though, Torch, over the journey of the season, when St Kilda do win, do they tend to win by within 4 goals?
Depends on how many goals Nick Riewoldt kicks, really.
And when Collingwood lose, do they lose by within 4 goals or more?
I'll tell you what, I don't really know, but I think that a couple of times they've been flogged, but usually they're fairly tight games.
Things
against
are different
Collingwood.
In finals. Okay, Torch, we've got a lot to make up tonight.
Well, you're asking me if I've done any research, Jeff.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't implying anything of the kind.
He was, wasn't he?
Don't start now.
Sick of the city? Then come with the Coulda Beans to the heartland. Let's head bush. We're going up country.
Thanks, Unc. We certainly are. And it's the cross-town battle. The Woomera goes far and wide, but look, it's all being settled in Horsham. We welcome to the Coulda Beans now Stuart Farr, playing coach of the Horsham Demons. Welcome to the show, Stuart.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And non-playing coach with the Horsham Saints, Brendan Broadbent. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much.
First of all, Brendan, congratulations on the tremendous effort getting to the grand final from... basically, you snuck into fifth, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a bit of a battle to get there, but I think we actually beat Horsham the last game we played in the home away season to actually cement our position in the fight.
Mm-hmm. So you had to win that game to make the finals?
We there was a possibility that we could have gone out with percentage-wise. Neil found some form late in the season, and they had to kick 20 goals in their last two games each to actually overtake us with the percentage, but we sort of were able to cement our position in the side once we won our last game.
And you've done extremely well since. So going into the final series with 8 wins, you come up against the Demons who've won 14 of the 16 contested. It's a huge effort, whatever happens today. But, Stuart, congratulations on your season. You've been minor premiers and had a pretty dominant year.
Yeah,
we've had a pretty consistent year, but yeah, look, third last time we played some mixer games, a fair old touch up, so yeah, all the quite good contest today.
And the Demons are well represented in all the grand finals today, is that the story, Stuart?
Yeah, all four football grades, yeah, they're in, yeah, so it's a big day for the club.
Are you at the ground already?
Yeah, I'm at the ground, yeah, as we speak.
And who's playing at the moment?
Our reserves are playing against Stall, and they're dead by about six goals halfway through the third quarter.
And what happened in the under-17s and the under-15s?
No, the under-14s, Stall won, beat Horsham. And the under-17s, they play after the reserves. They do it a bit different down here.
Okay. Oh.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned Stuart St. Mick's. Brendan, the Horsham Saints last year were St. Michael's, and under that moniker didn't have too much luck, did you?
No, we didn't have a lot of luck. We had a lot of young guys. The club sort of, I suppose, belated me a little bit after a lot of their better players sort of left to play district league football. They put in place a really good junior program, and it's just sort of starting to bear fruit for the club now. But I think we had about 14 guys that were 20 years and under last year, and 17 were 24 and under. So, you know, the guys that we had, they had a lot of development in them, and they've sort of shown that this year. They've progressed really well.
But you didn't win a game last year?
We got close. they're not close enough.
But this year you're in a grand final. That's a fantastic turnaround. Now, Stuart, you're the playing coach?
Yeah, that's correct.
Where do you play?
I'll play in the centre for a little bit today and see how we go, see if I can keep up.
It's pretty warm.
Yeah, it's a nice day here, about 22, 23. It's perfect.
So if it gets a bit too warm, where will you move yourself once you rotate out of the middle?
I might flip down forward. I might even have a spell on the bench and have a bit of a look from there.
All right. And Brendan, we've heard Stuart's already at the ground. Brendan, are you en route to the ground, are you?
Yeah, I'm heading down the Western Holloway in a bus with all the players and the match committee. So.
Oh, can we hear from them? Hold the phone up. Let give us a yell, fellas.
Yeah, it could have been Jamie. If you want to hear from us, take it over.
Well, there's a bit of spirit there.
Just a simple hello would have done.
I think it's a good thing we didn't ring them after the game.
Don't get them over aroused, whatever you do.
Oh, they are up and about, Brendan.
But you're already at the ground. What's the venue, Stuart?
Yeah, here at Ararat.
Ararat.
Yeah.
Oh, now, whereabouts at the Ararat ground are you at the moment, Stuart?
Myself situated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just sort of over behind the club room, just by myself at the moment.
Oh,
you're on the phone.
You're tucked away so you can hear properly.
Now, Stuart, there's a pretty strong wind blowing down here. What's it like up there?
Yeah, very strong wind, favouring one end.
So if you win the toss, kick with it or kick against it?
Nah, definitely go with it, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I'd take a wander over to the gate, Stuart, and tell the gatekeeper not to let a bus in that's on its way down.
Full of yahoos.
I'll do that now.
Terrific. And, of course, anyone that might be parked at the... we might try the car horn test, but you might be a bit far away from the cars.
Yeah, I'm a bit far away.
No, we won't do that. We'll let you get back to your preparations there, Stuart. I'm sure there's a clipboard and a magnet board that needs a lot of attention.
Yeah, no worries at all.
Thanks for joining us and have a great day. Really, there's no losers on a grand final day. It's just a fantastic festival of football. So, Stuart and Brendan, all the best to both of you and your teams and your clubs.
There they go. And
Brendan Broadbent on the team bus with the Horsham Saints heading to Ararat.
Next year we won't be doing the car horn test. We'll be doing the team bus test.
The team busometer.
They could have given us a burst of the wheels on the bus go round and round.
I love that Horsham Demons jumper. Yes. Now, people who were organising the Gold Coast nothings.
I found out something that was suggested to me last week. The Gold Coast developers.
That's very good.
And they've all got to wear white boots.
Oh, they could do a lot worse than just go over to countryfootyscores.com and just have a scan through some of the jumpers. Horsham Demons is beautiful. It's the really old Fitzroy style, not even with the monogram. It's just got the navy yoke and the maroon. It looks magnificent.
Mind you, someone did send us a link to a website during the week where there's some contest going on for the best or worst footy jumper in Australia.
They're all the worst.
A lot of contenders for the worst.
Here we were thinking that the stripes, the sashes and the Vs predominated across Australia. It was only the Gold Coast that were going a bit silly, but I tell you what.
Yeah. Well,
I'm rethinking my position.
Well, there's a lot of people rethinking that mascot up there. They're not too happy with it.
I just also mention on Country Footy, last week, of course, we spoke to the coaches of the Geelong Amateurs and Torquay, who were playing down at Torquay. Billy, yes. Your old team, Geelong Amateurs, won by about 10 goals. So
yes, they let it every change.
They did and kicked about 28 goals in the game.
The numbers there were 1-2.
Your team, the old Geelong, got knocked off by Bulleen Temple Stade.
They haven't been able to beat Bulleen Temple Stade for about 5 years or something. But mind you, the odds kicked 17-21 and Bulleen kicked 21-8 or something
like
that.
Bad kicking is, Kobe?
Bad football. And just quickly, one for you, Champy. The Geelong District Football League Grand Finals on the day between Thompson and Bell Post Hill. Thompson have a bloke playing for them who played in a premiership for Adelaide. Can you name him? Initials PV.
Peter Vardy.
Wow. How about that?
And Brian Behnke was last seen at Warrnambool recently.
Hey, those crows, they kick off.
Get around.
Now, just getting back to the Torquay Geelong Amos game last weekend, you were mentioning to Emma Quayle before how you reckon there's a lot of handy types at the Geelong Falcons who might end up at the Gold Coast. I did notice quite a few of the younger Falcon-listed boys actually played in that grand final.
Both sides, yeah. There's one of them going around today, I think, actually, for the Falcons who are playing a final up at Princes Park against the Oakley Titans.
Anyway, it's time for Covey's quiz. 1-300-222-774 is the number. Dial now.
And we should also mention our old friends at Coraline.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they've killed it.
They've won the first and the 12 o'clock game. But our old mate Mick playing at 47 years of age.
Good on you, Mick. Played in the reserves in the pocket. For the Cobras. 1-300-222-774 is the number. 1-300-222-774 right after this. Covey's quiz.
Dig deep into your wallet of wisdom and bag a bargain as Covey conducts a little quiz biz.
That he does, Unc. And Covey, your first contestant is Ian from Geelong.
Ask yourself a question, Covey.
Yes. Hello, Ian. How are you?
Hey, Covey. Good, thanks.
Good. Just having a look last night. Brian Lake. Richo and Torch are mentioning earlier, he kicked a goal last night. He's second for the year. How many career goals has Brian Lake kicked?
That's a silly question to ask a Saints supporter.
Well, look, I'll give him multiple choice, given what the time is. Is it 1, 13 or 150?
Oh, you've got to go 13.
Yeah, I think you do.
Nice bit of deduction there. Well done. There's a bit of coverage, of course, about Geelong and Footscray will be playing next week, and they played in the final in 1994, which we love to revisit. Yep. Billy Brownless kicked the goal after the siren. Who kicked the ball to Billy Brownless?
Oh, I remember that game too. Let's pluck one out of the hat, Spiro Malakalos.
You know what? That deserves to be the right answer.
Bad luck.
Bad luck, Ian. Thanks. We go to Warrandyte, and Richard joins us.
G'day, Richard.
Good morning.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Good. How's things there?
Do you know who kicked the ball to Billy Brownless in the 94 final when he kicked the goal to win the game? I'll give him multiple choice. Was it John Barnes, Gary Hocking or David Mensch?
Gee, unlikely to be Mensch. Porter Hocking.
No, it wasn't.
Bad luck, Richard. Look who's here. It's Greg and Craigie Burn.
Greg, g'day, Greg.
Hello, boys. How are we?
Are you down at the MCG getting ready for tonight?
No, I'm just about to leave, though.
Yeah, big night for the Pies. Did you go to Adelaide?
I thought about it, but no, I stayed home and watched it on TV.
Now, you listened to Grandstand, of course.
I did.
Who kicked the ball to Billy Brownless? Was it David Mensch or John Barnes?
Was it Lance from Lara's David Mensch?
It was David Mensch. Barnes knocked it down to Hocking, who kicked it to Mensch, who kicked it to Brownless. There you go. Menchie. Daniels G in Syracuse, I had a look at the footy record last night. He lists his ideal holiday destination as Italy, Bali or the Gold Coast.
Being a footballer, have to be the Gold Coast, wouldn't it?
No, Greg.
Bad luck, Greg. We go to Patrick in Baldwin.
G'day, Patrick.
Hi, how's it going?
That's not Patrick Bowden, who plays for Baldwin, who kicked 8 last week when they got beat by 10 goals by Vermont, is it?
No, it's not actually.
Right. Next question. Daniel G in Syracuse. Holiday destinations. Do you prefer Italy or Bali?
Bali.
Correct. I thought you might have fallen for the
year. I would have.
Craig Bolton. Had a look at his player profile too last night. His sporting hero. Is it Kelly Slater, Adam Gilchrist or Mike Tyson?
Mike Tyson?
Ah, no. That was the 90s.
Yeah, too far in the past, Patrick. 1-300-222-774 is the number if you want to participate in Covey's quiz. 1-300-222-774. Your next contestant, Covey, is from Canley. Do you know where that is?
No.
Around the panel. Anyone know where Canley is?
I reckon it might be out in the western suburbs.
Let's see if Declan, who lives there, can tell us. Hello, Declan.
Hello.
Where is Canley, Declan?
Down in the western suburbs near Deer Park.
Oh,
thank you. You've taught us all something.
Who are you married for, Declan?
North Melbourne.
Righto. They're out now, unfortunately. Craig Bolton from the Swans. Is he sporting hero Kelly Slater or Adam Gilchrist?
Adam Gilchrist?
Yes, Adam Gilchrist.
Declan.
I could have said Usain Bolt. Who's he? It's a toss-up for him between Matty Hayden and Adam Gilchrist, apparently. You're a bit on the young side, aren't you? You watched the footy last night?
I watched a bit of it.
Yeah, there was a free kick paid against the Western Bulldogs for an interchange infringement. Who was the player who infringed? Mucked up. Who mucked up?
I'll go Tim Cullen.
Yeah!
Good call, Declan. Oh, shit. You're burning. Is Declan inside of the finishing line?
Oh, there's three to go, but I can make it a bit. Now, Lindsay Gilbey starred last night for the Dogs. How many kicks did he have? I'll give you... do you want multiple choice or do you think you know?
Just whilst Dad checks the paper.
Yeah.
We'll give you multiple choice, Declan. Did he have a listen.
Did he have 1, 10 or 25?
I'll go 25.
Yeah, 25. Really? Good to see it's got back to being football. Someone's actually kicked it. He had 25 and 3.
I wish some of our blokes had a kick.
That was coming on. The most valuable player was awarded this week by the Players Association to Gary Ablett Jr. The winner of it, the first winner of the MVP way back in 1982, was a player whose name is given to the trophy. Can you tell me who that player was? The MVP receives the trophy. It's named after the player who won it first in 1982.
Don't know.
Have a guess.
He's just finished up coaching a league side.
Gee, that doesn't give it away.
Trying to help young Declan.
Come on, Declan. Have a stab, Declan.
Lee Matthews?
Yes! and one to go. I've got a question left over from a couple of weeks ago. Who was the Eagles' leading goal kicker this year? I'll give you multiple choice. Was it Quentin Lynch, Ben McKinley?
Ben McKinley?
Can you wait till I finish the multiple choice? Or Ben McKinley? Ben McKinley is Ben McKinley is correct.
You just jumped in and aced it. Declan, you are the winner. Declan. Stay on the line and Andy will get your details and we'll get your prize out to you. Well done. Thanks to everyone who rang in for Covey's quiz, including those waiting on the line. Better luck next week.
And I've made a mistake there too. The boy playing for Thompson is not Peter Vardy. Mm-hmm. It's Royce Vardy.
Who played for Richmond.
Here I was getting excited. It was Peter Vardy for your champy.
And do they bomb it long to Royce, do they?
Welcome to our colleague from ABC Grandstand, Jared Waitley, with a weird feeling. There's no footy game to be called the Savo, Jared.
We have to wait, Richo. It's a test of patience for us all, isn't it?
But we've got a full afternoon of footy entertainment coming up on ABC local radio, starting after the Could Have Been's in about an hour's time. You and Mark McClure are doing something unusual.
Brett Bourne will be here. No, nothing unusual. We'll be dissecting last night and just measuring it up in all sorts of different ways, seeing what it means for the victors as they go on and the losers as they reassess.
And after you guys are finished, we've got the now traditional In the Sheds with Paul Daffy and Ian Covert.
Yes. So if you are on your way, as we discovered just a short time ago, the Horsham Saints and the Horsham Demons are playing at Ararat today. If you're on your way to a grand final and all, stay tuned to ABC Radio and ring us in the scores during the course of the day too. We'll be going right around Australia.
Now, Jared, Torch and I were saying an hour ago, just at the very start of the show, that one of your dreams might come true now. Mm-hmm. Just after last night and the way the game was played, coming into this weekend, the focus just seemed to have got very vague on the finals and people were just losing interest, I think, looking at it as a foregone conclusion. Now, with Footscray storming into a preliminary final, it opens up the possibility of one thing that you've identified, the great lost grand final in history, the possibility of a St Kilda Footscray grand final.
Yes, well, And obviously tonight will determine that. I think this final series is suffering from a sense of formality, which has been imposed upon it, and that's partially by the performances of Geelong and Hawthorn, and partially just by everybody's reaction to it. And I'm sure that that takes some account on the crowd last night of only 42,000. Yeah. Tonight there'll be 80,000 because the Collingwood people always go. And the St Kilda Collingwood has probably greater attraction than the Bulldogs and the Swans. But I think people have lost sight as along the way there are significant achievements to be made within a final series. Sydney winning a final last week was hugely significant for them. In a year where they were entitled to be rebuilding, they didn't slip out of the eight. They won a final. The Bulldogs had to win a final. All their good work was unfortunately going to be bundled up into a failure of a year.
But now they're Collingwood in a preliminary final.
Yeah, Collingwood can make a preliminary final despite all that they've been through and the retirements and injuries they've had. And St Kilda can actually make something of their year, which looked like they would miss the eight. They finished in the four, and now they have the task of avoiding straight sets. So it's not all about winning the flag. Otherwise, there are 15 teams who are left totally unfulfilled, and that's not the way footy works.
Gerard, of course, you are an expert. That's why you're on in the afternoon. But I won't mention your Fremantle situation, because that's the one you're allowed to have. But in your view last night, and the view in the box at Grandstand, was everyone going for Footscray last night?
No, I was surprised. I was totally gung-ho on the Bulldogs, and if you saw my TV news piece last night, and they were always going to win because you don't spend 21 weeks in the top three without being a good side, and good sides rarely go in straight sets. The other three picked the Swans, which I was a bit surprised by. Parco, Jared, and of course Dan picked the Swans.
So they won't. they won't be on next Friday night. They've failed.
No, it's just one of those curiosities where every year in semi-final weekend we fall in love with the winning form and we dump the losers. Yeah. And it's one of those things I've got scribbled down along with never draw conclusions from round one. You know, these are things that you learn along the years and you stop doing.
And failure is a great motivator to be able to redeem yourself. And when I saw the little paper yesterday publishing the stats of about 10 or 12 Dogs players from the previous Friday night, I thought, if you're one of those players, you read that, there's no way you're going to perform badly tonight.
Yeah, Same's got to go for St Kilda, doesn't it?
No. Well, actually, this is where there's a slight hiccup because of what happened in round 22. The Bulldogs were a better side than Sydney all year. They'd beaten them twice. They were in front of them after every round of the season. Collingwood was a better side than St Kilda over the year. They were in front of St Kilda 17 of the 22 weeks, and it all swung on that bizarre round 22.
It ruined the whole final series.
Collingwood's beaten St Kilda twice.
Nick Riewoldt having as quiet a game as he had last week ever in his career?
Oh, well, that's... it was rare, yes. I think Collingwood will beat St Kilda the same way the Bulldogs beat the Swans, just to frank the form rather than
over the whole season.
Yep. Entitled to draw conclusions over 6 months rather than 1 week.
But as Covey said, looking at the stats, there'd be some St Kilda players will be running out tonight with an awful lot to prove.
Yes. It's a massive opportunity for Collingwood.
I think the Collingwood thing is unbelievable. The number of young blokes on that side.
Yeah.
And who normally you think they play might play a good one, and then, you know, as they all do, they're inconsistent when you're young. But they've actually been producing it for several weeks in a row now.
I'll go the other way, and I think Saints will win because you get one good final theory.
Yes.
Saints haven't had theirs yet. Oh, Collingwood have had theirs. Yeah. And Sydney have had theirs.
Yep.
And the Dogs have had theirs.
When did
Adelaide
the Crows
will get
have
theirs? One day.
and some don't get one. Yeah, right.
And the other thing you have to ask, of course, a team with a lot of young players coming into finals, I mean, there's no guarantee they're going to perform all the time, is there, really?
No. But St Kilda's not flush with experience either. They've got plenty of young players. We believe that Luke Ball won't play. They've got all sorts of worries to counter what you're saying.
Any thought of perhaps, you know, they've got a bit of time this afternoon to, you know, have a bit of a chat and expose a few theories and that? Any perhaps of carrying the Brownlow voting over into the finals? Just thought Jimmy could have picked up another three last Sunday afternoon just to really make it interesting.
I think Kirky might have got three last week, too.
Well, speaking of themes that need to be carried over, I think we've had 10 days of it now of ooh, ho-hum, you know, the crowds, they're not what they should be, the AFL, they've made a mistake, Western Sydney, yada, 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 yada. Were there enough people at the game last night or not? I don't think that's been decided yet, but someone will tell us. What's the benchmark for tonight's game in terms of the crowd whether it's judged to have been suitably large enough for a St Kilda Collingwood final.
It has to be plus 75.
Mm.
The two finals last week in Melbourne were both over 70. And with Collingwood involved and the support that they have, it has to be plus 75. And it would surprise me if it wasn't more than 80.
Not much doubt about it tonight.
So if it is below 75, how can we somehow turn that into some sort of warning bells about the Western Sydney team? There's got to be a way you can do it. Surely.
Well, if it's below 75, the Pie fans have let us down again.
Hey, don't forget the St Kilda supporters. St Kilda are massively supported.
And there's also the possibility that tonight is it for Robert Harvey.
Yes.
Mm. So, you know, who's to say when it will come? But if you're a St Kilda fan, you want to be there.
It's a big night for that club.
And there were plenty of Saints there last Sunday afternoon as well.
Oh, no doubt they outnumbered the Geelong fans last week.
Exactly right. And so many of them were calling out for Luke Ball to come back into the side, because several times in the first quarter I heard them go, "Whoa!" they were desperate. They were calling for him.
There was a desperation about that crowd, wasn't there, where you knew the fans of one side knew that they were massive underdogs and everything had to go right from the very beginning.
And nothing did.
No, it was sort of petered.
And the other thing about last night and tonight, the weather is really nice.
Yeah, so it's football weather now.
There's an opportunity for the theatre goers to go. But if they're members, they probably will go. But whether people are prepared to pay the 60-odd bucks to just go and watch a game they're not particularly connected to.
Well, I think this is where people will go next week. The theatre goers will wait for the prelims because they're going to be beauties. You know, it doesn't matter who wins tonight. Hawthorn versus either Collingwood or St Kilda's a ripper. Plus, Buddy's playing, so why wouldn't you go? And Geelong and the Bulldogs has a lovely little edge to it as well.
And prelim weekend, Jared, these things spin away from me now, and I can no longer remember. It's like Brownlow medalists, Melbourne Cup winners, and premiers. I can rattle them off from 18 whatever it is, but it all peters out around about 1978, and then everything becomes a blank and a blur. How long is it since, under the new system, we've had both preliminary finals played in Melbourne?
Oh, I did this the other day. I think it was 2000. There was an all-Victorian top four.
So it's actually quite a long time since we've had what looks on paper under the current system, two preliminary finals, a perfect lead into the grand final. Every year it always seems to be mucked up because one of the games is played at Football Park in front of a VFA crowd, and it doesn't feel like a final, much less a preliminary final. So, this year it's going to be the real deal.
Yeah, so in 2000 it would have been the Friday night, I think, was North and Melbourne, and the Saturday was Essendon and did they play Carlton that year?
That's right. Yeah. Yes, they did.
That's now a long time ago. So a weekend in Melbourne with two preliminary finals is really got a bit of carnival about it.
So it'll be Friday night and Saturday arvo.
It will. And that's we corrected that a couple of years ago, and applauded to the AFL for fixing that, because Friday night, Saturday night was ridiculous
for
preliminary final week.
Yeah.
So which means we have the right fixture now.
And that'll allow us to be now at the MCG next Saturday pre-match as well, which will be terrific.
Where we will be. Jared, you can go round to the office and start cranking up Mark McClure.
We'll be talking to Lindsay Gilby from the Dogs.
25 also kicks and 3 handballs last night. Can you give Kenny Casellas a call and see whether they were 3 effective hand passes?
And Andrew McKay has been appointed to the curious position of, what would you say, trends monitor in the AFL. He hasn't done an interview yet. He's going to speak with us after 2 o'clock. We'll learn a bit more about that. He's also the chairman of the match review panel. So
I thought he was doing the laws of the game.
Well, he's advising the laws of the game.
Trends monitor, is that like, you know, blackboard monitor, lunch monitor?
I'll give you his official title later, but that's how I like it.
It's flares or bell bottoms, beanies or duffel glasses on here.
And no doubt while you're in there this afternoon contemplating what's going to happen tonight, you'll be keeping an eye on Mooney Valley.
Of course. We'll drop in the race results along the way. Actually, Covey, you'll notice your slot fits nicely around the couple of features at the Valley, and then we're back at the G. I wonder how we'll spend those couple of hours.
We'll be listening to all of it.
We'll have
Jared.
Updates.
Thank you. And of course, tonight's game is St Kilda and Collingwood. It's one of those underrated rivalries, certainly in my mind, through the 60s and into the early 70s. St Kilda Collingwood games were always huge.
And Billy and I were just speculating before. I wonder if it might be a one-point result tonight.
Oh, couldn't that ever be? Julian is going to take us right back over 40 years to... there's really the one that got away from St Kilda is 1965. Everyone knows they won the 66 flag, but lots of people feel they actually had a better side in 65. Mm. They were the minor premiers, and it got away from them.
Oh, don't use that term. No. Or Andrew McKay, as trends monitor, will ring up and say, there's too much of this minor premiers...
business.
Trend towards saying minor premiers. They finished on top,
They finished on top. Joining us in the studio after we've gone back in the time machine is Brownlow medalist Ross Smith. But right now, let Julian take you back to the second semi-final, 1965.
A pro or a learner, a twister, a turner, you've got to be fast on your feet to escape the heat of Professor Ross and the Bunsen burner. Turn it up, Jules.
St Kilda and Collingwood have met in finals with cliffhanger action. Like climbing Everest. One of the biggest Alps. 1965 second semi. Magpies in command during the first. Clive House of Water. Full forward, Ian Graham, quick on the lead. Accurate as Bill Collins from all angles. Four majors, 20 minutes in. By contrast, the Saints wayward in front of the sticks. 2-7 to 5-5. At the change of ends, the men from the southern suburbs rallied over the second. Verdon Howell, who made his reputation as a fullback, shifted forward with immediate success. Two snags with as many kicks. Resting ruckman Alan Morrow and Carl booted truly. Graham unstoppable. Goal from 45. At half-time, Cole led 8-7 to 6-14. Third term, ebb and flow. Graham gold for the Pies. Six pointers for Howell and Morrow. Lead changed seven times. St Kilda, 12 points up at three-quarter time. The last 30. Norman, then Graham. Goals for the Black and Whites. Henderson got through traffic and socketed a beauty. Saints back from the abyss. Howell, major. Dieterich, amazing goal for a ruckman. Morabonites just ahead. Tuddy and Graham, both offline. Norman's shot, touched through by a desperate Saints defence. Final siren, St Kilda home by a point. 13-24 to 14-17. Howell 4, Morrow and Carl 3. Collingwood spearhead, Graham 6. Saints scale the heights of football magnificence.
Ah, thanks, Julian. And I'm sure people said at the time, well, you'll never see that again, a final decided by 1 point.
Yes.
And just 53 weeks later, that's exactly what happened with the same two teams in the 66 grand final. Veteran of both those games, Brownlow medalist, St Kilda champion, joins us in the studio now. Welcome to the Coulda Beens, Ross Smith.
Thanks very much, Chef.
And Ross, look what you've brought with you. You've brought the footy record from the second semi in 1965. What's the price on it?
It's 1 shilling or 10 cents.
Oh, for those people who are just grappling with
the change currency.
Yeah. Well, it hadn't yet happened in 1965, so it was a way of getting people used to
it. It was on the way in.
Yeah. Ross, how well do you remember the game?
Which one? The second semi?
That second semi.
Well, that's why I had to go to these, because it's a long while ago.
You've got the Sporting Globe.
And the Footy Week. The Footy Week.
Which was the first paper that actually had stats, wasn't it?
It was, yes. And it was probably the forerunner of all the stats we've got today. And yeah. I get the players really did go for it. It was available Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And it was you could go and get it at the local fruit market or
it
the
was
local
free,
corner
wasn't
shop.
It?
Yes, it was free, yes. Yeah.
And was that the first thing players did? They wanted to look up their stats?
Well, yes, that was one of the things that players were pretty pretty impressed by in those days, are today.
I bet Yab wasn't happy with that, people counting their kicks.
Well, I don't know where the coaches. I think, well, eventually coaches used to have a number of people who would then take on the stats so that they had them not on a Sunday, but they would have them during a game and they could attend to the information as it was available to them.
Well, the 1965 second semi, have you looked up, done the research? What were your stats? Did you go all right in that game, as you recall, Ross?
I can't remember that stat, but the important one was that we won by a point. And we'd had a very good year. St Kilda did have a very good year, and I guess that was the start of our run. We didn't perform as well in the grand final, but we did win the second semi-final. We probably got there too soon. in the sense that when we got to the grand final, we were overrun by Essendon, who had the first team who'd come from fourth position in those days, and then steamrolled the teams each week.
But you did have a great side that year. There's St Kilda supporters I know, my mother included, who to this day say you should have won that flag.
Well, we should have, yes. I think we had a very skillful side, probably in many ways a bit more skillful than the 66 team. I think the 66 team had another dimension of sort of integrity and tenacity, which we probably didn't have as much of in 65. And there were some lessons learned from 65 which enabled us to win in 66.
How long had you been at the club?
I started in 1961.
Okay.
So I played my was 100th game in the 1966 final series.
Mm. And Yabby was your coach the whole way through?
Yes, he was, yes.
Tell us about the Alan Yabby genes of the early to mid-60s.
Well, I guess he was like us all, and we were all starting out. You know, we St Kilda was a relatively new team. He'd taken over at the age of 27. I went there as an 18-year-old player, and I was fortunate, I guess, that I grew with the team, and the team grew with us all. And obviously Alan matured and developed as a coach, and he became obviously one of the best coaches in the AFL, or the VFL in those days.
You're also there with the arrival of one Carl Dittrich, and I suppose people these days don't realise just what an impact that he had on the whole football scene in those early days.
Well, he did. I guess the year before was when Baldock came in 62. Mm-hmm. He had started to have the impact, and then we had a number of players like Dittrich and a couple of other players, and then we had Cowboy Neil, Barry Breen in the 64-65 period. And so we were building up to having a very good team. And Dittrich burst onto the scene in some ways like the Buddy Franklin of today.
That's right. Yeah.
How much did you learn from Darryl Baldock? Because he was very evasive, and you yourself were very skilled at being able to get out of a situation not balking or basically just turning. You seemed quite flexible in that respect. Was that from watching the Doc?
Well, the Doc was probably, I guess, one of my mentors. Not that it was an official role as a mentor, but obviously playing with him every week, you could see what he does do. He and Ian Stewart were terrific players for St Kilda over those years, and I can remember thinking that Ian Stewart, why does the backman always kick to Stewart when they're in their strife? You know, the opposition backman kick. So I thought, well, now he's obviously got to work out where that ball's going. And so I guess in some ways try to model myself on the way in which Stewart tried to anticipate where they were going and the way in which Baldock protected the ball with his body from his opponents.
And, of course, we're talking about this St Kilda-Collingwood game from 65, and, of course, then 66, in the context of the fact that they're playing tonight, but also just reflecting on the fact that, you know, you got beaten by Essendon as well and played them. There was a great rivalry, wasn't it, between the St Kilda and Essendon as much as there was with Collingwood at the time.
Well, I guess the fact that Essendon had beaten us in that 65, they, I think, were benefited by having quite a number of their 65 team who had been in their 62 team. And so they had that experience, and that enabled them to just get over the top of us. And they were they had a head of steam coming out of what was then the first semi-final and then the prelim final and then coming to play us in the grand final.
There was a surfeit of talented Rovers in those days too. You really had to earn your kicks against your opposition. You had Skilt, you had Goggin.
Johnny Burt.
Yeah, even Kevin Murray acted as a Rover on occasion.
Well, I guess when I was a youngster, I followed Essendon as my team, and I had Jack Clark and John Burt, who were my, I guess, my heroes.
You were a junior at, was it Hampton Rovers?
Yes, Hampton Rovers, yes, in the Amateurs. I played under 19 football then. And ironically enough, my first game was playing against Jack Clark and John Burt, so they didn't make it very easy for me.
Did they give you a lesson, Ross?
Well, they certainly did in many ways. And the other one was David Shaw, who played with Essendon as well. Now, David Shaw, as you know, is probably close to 6 foot in the war and very agile, and he was playing as a Rover as well. So it made it difficult for a youngster coming into the game.
It's interesting, isn't it, to talk about that so much of the game today revolves around the midfield, and there's a gaggle of them in most sides and all, but it was like Ewan Stewie was a fair start to building a midfield, wasn't it? I mean, you got a Brownlow medalist centreman and a Brownlow medalist rover.
Well, it was also, I guess, the way in which Alan Jeans fashioned a role for me to play within the team. I guess he tried to capitalise on the strengths of the players, and he felt that my fitness levels would enable me to be a midfield player. But I rove more of the back line and going up to the half-forward line and really went into the forward line. So we had an Alan Davis who was more a forward rather than a rover. And I guess he, over a period of what, leading up to 65, that was the, he was working out, okay, where can I play this young player and benefit from his strengths?
And of course, another one of the rivalries was with us, with South, because they were the old Lakeside Premiership. And we always used to save our best for you.
You did, yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. You mentioned skills before. He was a tough competitor. He was a bit like Baldock, that if he had his body over the ball, there's no way known you were going to get it back because he was so compact, so close to the ground, great control. He was one of the first players who could kick on either side of his body.
My memory of that era, 65, 6, 7 even, the St Kilda Collingwood games were always massive. Who did you find yourself at? You know, the ball's about to be bounced. Who were you usually lining up against from Collingwood?
Wayne Richardson. And I had some difficulties because of Thompson. Thompson was a very good aerialist, and he was probably one of the first who wanted to be a genuine all-rounder who was flexible, who could pick the ball up off the ground, he could run, he could leap, he could mark, do all those things. So he's the first of those. But he was a terrific knock ruckman, and I found it difficult with Wayne Richards, and he was a terrific player, Wayne.
And also he was a bigger rover than you.
He was,
He used to fly for marks as well.
Oh, he did. He kicked a number of goals, yes.
And who gave you the best service as a ruckman at St Kilda during your time?
Brian Minot. Alan Morrow initially. And then when he left, Brian Minot.
Brian, I see Brian a bit because he lives down Anglesey these days, and I saw him at the footy at Geelong a few weeks. He looks like he'd still be playing, Brian. He's in very good nick.
He is. He's now taken up bike riding, so he's lost a bit of weight, but he really is very slim, very fit looking.
Yeah.
I guess the only other one was Carl. Mm. Carl rose onto the occasion, and sometimes he could put it exactly where you wanted it to, so I don't want to leave him out of the recognition.
No, you wouldn't want to.
No.
Russ, tell us about winning the 1967 Brownlow medal. Did you feel toward the latter part of the season, gee, I'm putting in some good games here, I might be a chance for the Brownlow? Did it mean anything to you in those terms? And when you won it, what was its weight?
I guess I'm like all other players in some ways. You don't really focus on winning the Brownlow because you've got no control over that. You don't know how you're going. There's only one umpire who's going to be making the awards, and it just happens. I guess you get an indication of where you might be in terms of recognition by other football awards, and I was well up in a couple of those other awards.
But Stewie, was it always a thing at St Kilda that, like, you know, that, like, at the moment, like Geelong with Ablett and Bartels, are they taking votes off each other? Was it like that? Because Stewie, you know, he'd won a couple.
I guess it was to some degree. I guess the thing in my favour was that St Kilda didn't have as good a year, unfortunately, in 67 as we'd had in 65, 66. So we had the post-premiership blues in 67. But I was able to play reasonably well through the year.
Where's the Brownlow now, Ross?
Well, I've just got it back home. It's been for 10 years up at the exhibition centre at the Australian Institute of Sport.
Mm-hmm. No, and of course it still gets you an invitation to the Brownlow. Do you go along every year?
Yes, we do. Yes, go along.
Fantastic.
Because there was nothing to go along to in 67. Was Brownlow night still the Monday after round 18? Tell us about that night.
Well, at that stage, only about a month before, my mother had died, and my father died a lot earlier than that. But Alan Jean said, why don't you come round and have dinner with Mary and myself, which I did. And so we went around. I had dinner with Mary and Alan Jeans, and we listened to the radio. And then we were getting towards the end of it, and Ian Drake rang up and said, I think we better come, Cock, and we'll take you to Channel 7. But we started off, they counted in those days the one votes first, and I got five of those, and you think, oh, well,
that's it,
yes. And then I only got a couple of two votes, and I thought, oh, well, that's it. Mm. And then got another three votes.
So the expectation was that somehow or other that you or the club would organise to drive you into Channel 7.
If that had to be, yes. Yeah.
It wasn't TV ringside.
No. We just had to go in and make an appearance in Channel 7.
Interesting.
And then we went back out to the St Kilda Football Social Club.
They would have been happy back. That social club, by golly.
Swinging then.
Yeah, it was then. That's what I'm only thinking of in the Trevor Barker days, but it was fine.
Swinging for different reasons in my day.
St Kilda is one of the most important clubs in terms of the fabric of league footy and how it fits into life and everything. You've been through the whole era where you would have started playing at the Junction Oval?
Yes, I did, yes.
And then you went through that big move to Moorabbin. Now, not everyone was in favour of it, were they?
No, I guess there was obviously the diehards, but from the point of view of the way in which the club saw themselves moving forward, moving into what they thought was going to be their area for supporters and players. And it was a way in which the club could be responsible for their own ground and take some responsibility for it, whereas it was a shared facility at the old St Kilda ground. A terrific surface on which to play, other than playing on the cricket pitches. But at Moorabbin, we had purely a football ground, and so the football club decided that they would take control that way.
Mm-hmm. And now Moorabbin's gone. Did you line up in any of the factions when that was all contentious?
Well, players like myself step back, and so obviously there's a new administration there, and they make those sorts of decisions for the long-term benefit of the club.
And you coached the Saints for just the 1 year,
one
Ross?
Year, yes, yes, 1977.
Right. Why was it just 1 year, Ross? Or was that a...
Well, we weren't successful. That was probably one of the major reasons.
Well, you lasted longer than Blighty, St Kilda.
Yeah, but I didn't get the payout that Blighty got.
And, of course, you all have a background in phys ed and sports science and all that sort of stuff, and it is so much a big part of today's coaching, isn't all the specialised stuff. I mean, could you see that coming when you were studying it yourself?
Yes, I could, I guess, because that was one of the reasons I went to Perth for 2 years to do a postgraduate degree. I was preparing myself for a life after football, as you had to do in those days. And so the work that I did then gave me the information about how the preparation of players and organisation and management of them. So that prepared me for my future, I guess.
You came back from Western Australia saying, look, one day there'll be no medicine balls in footy prep. You're joking.
But tonight we've got a St Kilda Collingwood final at the MCG. You can't envision a St Kilda Collingwood final without thinking back to 66, which is one of the most celebrated and legendary grand finals in history. How well do you remember it now, Ross?
Well, I remember very vividly the siren sounding. Yes. The 5 minutes or so before that, in terms of just the noise when the scores were level, and then when Bruni kicked the behind, just the sound just reverberated in and out of the stadium. It was something that you haven't experienced
before. And were you aware you were in front? Because you get the sense like it was level and no one knew what was going to happen. Yeah. And the point was almost like a bit of a letdown because people were expecting a goal. Hang on, they're a point in front. What does that mean? It wasn't as though the crowd erupted, hey, the Saints are going to win this now, because it was still only a point.
Yeah. But it had been a very tight game all along, and recognising that our previous game against Collingwood, we weren't as well prepared, and Tuddy had a day out. And so this time we had to curtail Tuddy, which John Bingley did. But the game did pulsate throughout the match.
Pulsate's a great word.
And right at the very end, I mean... You watch it again on the replay, and the ball's coming out, and Tuddy's got it.
Well, I can remember Tuddy grabbing it sort of from the back line, and there didn't seem to be anyone chasing him. And I remember chasing him towards the centre, and I thought, why don't you kick it? Because I don't have to chase you anymore.
Who did you swap your jumper with, Ross?
Wayne Richardson.
Uh-huh. Okay. And do you still have that jumper?
I still have Wayne's. He doesn't have mine.
What's he done with yours?
Well, he can't remember what he's done with mine.
Oh, we'll have to talk to him about that.
He probably
that.
Wore it for
Would
training.
You like to see that come back, Ross? Because that was, in fact, the last game where the league allowed jumper swapping.
Yeah, well, I think you can still have your jumper swapping, but I guess looking at even the photographs here where Doc's holding the cup wearing a Collingwood jumper, I think the league did the right thing there because... Well, I guess we were just following tradition of swapping jumpers, and that was the best thing about it. But I think there is a time, and maybe after the
presentation.
You need two sets of jumpers. One, you want to keep your own one and swap one as well. Yes. And now, will you be going tonight to barrack for the Saints?
Yes, certainly we'll be there. Yes.
So even though you barracked for Essendon before you played there, you didn't go back to barrack for Essendon and stayed with your Saint? No. And will they win tonight, Ross?
I'd like to think they'll win. I think they're going to struggle. But, they've done so well to get where they've got. Maybe they've just got that last little bit in them.
They're lacking a big Carl, I reckon.
After that famous win in 1966, it would be hard to imagine as a player that you'd go for so long without actually winning another premiership.
Yes, well, we got very close in 71 again. We played off with Hawthorn and we were beaten by 7 points.
The Bob Kenny game, wasn't it?
Bob came in, we were 27 points up at three-quarter time, which we should never have lost. But You know, that was an era when we were very... The Hawthorne St Kilda games were a bit like we were saying before, Jeff, about the Collingwood and St Kilda games. There's just so much intensity in those.
Mm-hmm. There'll be plenty of that tonight, I'd suggest.
And, Ross, we've just had a call from your old club Hampton Rovers. They're playing in a C-grade grand final at Trevor Barker.
They are, yes.
Against Ormond today.
Let's see how... Ross, enjoy tonight's game. Let's hope it brings us everything we expect from the finals.
And if the camera goes on you during the Brownlow telecast, can you give us a wave too? That'd be fantastic.
Thanks very much, gentlemen.
See you, Ross. Thanks for joining us, Ross Smith.
From Footscray to Frio, not even Sol Trujillo has to pay a fee. Oh, fling your finger at the phone and talk to Torch.
Well, we're at the business end, as they say, as we've already said this morning and this afternoon, Torch. It is the business end. So I expect there's plenty of callers want to talk finals with you. Let's not muck around, Torch.
Okay,
ready
right
to go.
It.
First caller, go ahead, please. You're talking to Torch on the Could Have Been Champions.
Hello.
G'day, Torch.
Oh, who's this?
Caden.
Caden?
Yeah.
Where are you calling from, Caden?
Caroline Springs.
Caroline Springs?
Yeah.
You follow the football, Caden?
Well, yeah.
Yeah? Who do you support, Caden?
Blues.
Blues? Not in the finals, though, Caden.
Nah, but Juddy.
Yeah, what about him?
Oh, like, he won that Jaden Nikos medal.
The John Nichols medal, yes, for the best and fairest at the Carlton Football Club.
Yeah.
And?
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah, he was. Anything else, Caden?
What?
Anything else?
Thanks, Caden. Obviously, yes, the Carlton supporters are very pleased that their investment in Juddy is
paying
off.
Yes.
The next call, you're talking to Torch. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
We got you guys.
Oh, who's calling, please?
Hans is here.
Hans, calling from?
Hans is here in Handorf, you guys.
Handorf, up in the Adelaide Hills.
Yes. Very good. You know where it is, what Handorf is.
I do.
Listen, you guys.
Yes.
It wasn't such a big deal that everybody didn't was at that football game amid the cross, because last Saturday afternoon,
yes,
we had a big super sausage sizzle in the Handorf. Everybody did come to it. We had bratwurst, we had meatwurst, we had weisswurst, and because there's so much English in Adelaide, we had an Epping sausage.
So a big turnout for the sausage sizzle at Handorf, Hans.
Why would you go to football when you could get it bratwurst?
Okay.
Well, that explains.
That sounds. I think the AFL has to take account of that.
I think Hans is just another one of these Adelaide supporters, just a bit too satisfied with just making the eight.
That's right.
Next caller, go ahead, please. You're talking to Torch.
Hello.
Oh, hey, Torchy.
Who's this?
Yeah, Donnie here, mate.
Donnie, sounding a bit flat today, Don.
Oh, yeah, been a big night, mate.
Oh, where you been?
Oh, just up the Tiger's Arms playing darts.
Yes?
Yeah.
Yep. With your mate Nobby?
Yeah, and all the boys.
Yeah.
Hey, mate.
Yeah.
We heard that Harry Taylor at Geelong.
Yeah.
He drinks cognac.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think Nobby, I read something Nobby. About that in the paper.
Yeah, Nobby thought last night he might try channeling Harry Taylor.
How did he end up?
Oh, shocking, mate. Hey, listen.
Yeah.
I heard you talking before about someone, was it the Swans? I really feel the three-card trick.
That's right, yes. They
got
play.
Got a football question for you.
Righto.
What's the first card trick and what's the two-card trick?
That's a very good question, and as you know, Torch will go away and research that one. So listen next week, he'll have an answer for you.
Yeah, because we might do a few card tricks down the pub next Friday night if you can tell me what the first two are.
Okay, Donnie, we'll get back to you on that one.
Well, Torch, and we'll make sure we keep our Tasmanian listeners informed. Next caller, go ahead, please. You're talking to Torch.
Hello.
Yes, I do appreciate you taking my call.
Yes, who's calling, please?
That's Pearl.
Pearl calling from?
Pearl on the line.
Pearl on the line? Where are you calling from?
I'm on the Peninsula.
Peninsula, down on the Mornington Peninsula?
On the Peninsula, dear. Yes, I heard you talking to a young lass before.
That's right.
About the draft, and, yes. Well, I didn't hear the entire conversation because I'm bleaching some doilies today, and if I don't keep an eye on them, they stay in the bleach too long, and they're quite old. They've been in the family for quite some time. They're very lovely and delicate. As a result, one has to watch them or else they shall perish and just rot away, and I can't afford to do that because they're monogrammed, you see, and they mean quite a lot to me. And I heard you talking to the young lady about the draft. past.
That's right, yes.
And I have a very good solution. Yes. But quite a lot of them are made from the wrong stuff, as you say. I use corduroy because if you use a cotton or a gingham, that can catch under the door as you open the door up. Now, a corduroy will slide along the linoleum, or if it's carpet, it might be
I'll have to stop you there, Pearl. Like I think you've got the wrong sort of draft.
That's right. Any sort of draft is most uncomfortable. Now, I rug up quite well. I've got two Spencers on, and I've got a shawl, and I've got a
we're not talking
nice
about the draft under the door, Pearl.
Slippers. I find that wool is too hot for the feet. Okay. I just have a nice, loose, look, Pearl, I might hand you back to our producer, and maybe he can explain to you. But slippers are very funny, because if you have a pair of
I'm going to have to hand you back to our producer, Andy. Andy, could you take Pearl?
Yeah, and look, now that the springtime's come, the drafts aren't such an issue anymore, right, are they, Torch? Okay. Next caller, you're talking to Torch. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes, hello, Torch.
Who's this?
It's Barry here, Torch.
Barry, calling from?
The Barossa Valley.
The Barossa Valley, home of the wine industry in South Australia.
Very concerned about events last Saturday afternoon at the West Lakes Festival Theatre.
Yes.
I believe it was less than a full house.
It was, indeed. No, they didn't have the house full sign up last week,
well,
Barry.
Clearly they're going to get the need to get a new impresario in. Why don't they call on Baz Luhrmann? He knows how to fill a theatre.
He does, indeed. Any other suggestions, Barry?
Well, I've suggested Barry Koski in the past, but he might be a bit avant-garde for the
crows. That's right. Yes. Well, look, they're very good suggestions.
Well, Baz Luhrmann with a name like that, you'll fit in
Adelaide. You'll fit in very well in
Adelaide. Next caller, you're talking to Torch.
Hello.
You'd think when they're building a house that the door would be closer to the ground. I suppose the door can fall.
Look, thank you for your suggestions, Pearl.
Next caller, go ahead, please. You're talking to Torch.
Hello.
Oh, g'day, Torch.
Who's this?
It's Danny.
Danny. Oh, Danny from Droop Street?
Yeah, I'm in Droop Street.
Yeah, from Footscray. Oh, it's a great win last night, Danny.
Oh, mate, it just gets worse and worse.
Oh, what do you mean, Danny? You're in the preliminary final.
Oh, they're just setting us up for a big fall, mate. They're extending the agony. Surely they could just end our suffering.
Oh, look, Danny, yeah, you've got to go in feeling some confidence about the way you've played.
That's all the calls we've got time for. Mark, have we got the line up to the temple? Is the guru there? I believe he is.
Hello, Guru Bob.
Hello, Todd. Yeah. Hello there.
Oh, I can hear you loud and clear.
I hear you too. I can hear you too.
Yes, now.
Yes. Yeah. I heard you talking before about the dogs, opening the door for the possibility of the, the dogs and kill the grand final.
That's
the Supreme
right.
Master has a response.
What's that?
IYD.
Which is?
In your dreams.
Okay. Now, are you looking at a game today?
No. No? I'm just giving you lots of advice.
Oh, good.
I'll sing for you.
Yes.
When one door slams,
mm-hmm.
the other one shuts in your face. And another one.
Yes.
When the Lord closes the door, open a window, but go out by the door anyway. It's usually a trick. And I heard Jared Whitley saying,
yes,
you know, he said about earlier what he was talking about. Old saying, when Moses and his people escaped the pursuing Egyptians by parting the Red Sea, he said, that just shows good sides rarely go out in straight sets. Think about that.
Thank you, Guru. Good afternoon to Billy Baxter.
Enjoy your football.
Ian Cover.
Go Cats next week.
Torch McGee.
Go Bloods next year.
Greg Champion.
Go the Crows.
It's good afternoon from me, Jeff Richardson.